This is Arab Talk on KPOO 89.5 FM in San Francisco. This is Arab Talk with Jess and Jamal. I'm Jess Hannam.
And I'm Jamal Dejani.
Jamal, there's been international global condemnation of the apartheid state of Israel for its brutal, targeted assassination of seven aid workers associated with the World Central Kitchen. This has drawn the international condemnation of world communities, leaders, political officials, including the Biden administration, including NATO countries, and including public health leaders from all over the world, including a full-throated condemnation by World Central Kitchen's founder, José André. It's causing quite an upstir, and we'll continue to follow this story in a very direct way. We're also going to talk about Palestinians who've been arrested in northern Gaza, and they describe how Israeli soldiers systematically abuse civilians from severe deprivation to brutal physical violence. And Jamal, a recent report by Physicians for Human Rights and Médecins Sans Frontières described that the famine that Palestinian children are experiencing right now is going to cause long-term physical, psychological, and brain impairments for the rest of their lives, even if the famine is stopped. So the situation remains grave. We know that 33,000 Palestinians have been murdered by the apartheid Israeli forces. 75,000 have been injured. There are some noises that the Biden administration has made about forcing the Israeli government to allow more aid in. We see no evidence of that whatsoever. So we have a lot to cover today, Jamal, and we may start with a topic that we haven't given much thought to, which is the topic of the impact on the healthcare sector and the devastation to it that we've been witnessing in Gaza right now.
Of the 36 main hospitals that used to serve over 2 million Palestinians in Gaza, only 10 remain somewhat functional, with severe limitations on the types of services they can deliver. As the World Health Organization marks World Health Day on April 7, under the theme, My Health, My Right, this basic right is utterly out of reach for civilians in Gaza. Access to healthcare in Gaza has become totally inadequate. Al-Shifa Hospital, and I'm going to talk about that because you're very familiar with this hospital, the most important referral hospital in Gaza, with 700 beds and a brand new surgery complex that was funded by the EU, was laid to waste by Israel. World Health Organization staff members recently documented, after they've noticed, multiple shallow graves around the hospital with many dead bodies buried with their limbs just visible, sticking out. Explain, because you're very familiar, you've been to Gaza, you've been to Al-Shifa, you've been to many of these hospitals, the significance of Al-Shifa and the level of healthcare it provided for all Gaza, especially during these last few months during the assault.
Well, Jamal, this is an incredibly important topic, and I'm glad that we're going to be covering it on Arab Talk today, because it's something that doesn't get enough attention in the mainstream media. Just by virtue of background, and you know this, and some of our listeners and viewers know this, I've been going to Gaza for over 25 years now doing work in the healthcare sector, both in the mental health care sector as well as the healthcare sector. And frequently when I go there, I stay in a little place that is walking distance to Al-Shifa Hospital. Al-Shifa Hospital was a jewel within the healthcare system in Palestine, not just in Gaza. It was considered, prior to October 7th, one of the premier, if not the premier, healthcare center for Palestinians in Gaza, for the 2.5 million Palestinians in Gaza. Not only was it an amazing inpatient hospital, but it also had outpatient services. And more importantly, in Gaza, for example, it had primary care, secondary care, and what we call tertiary care. So it had all levels of care in terms of providing the specialized treatment that Palestinians who get sick in Gaza were able to access. And as you mentioned in your intro, over 700 beds. Having been to Al-Shifa Hospital countless number of times, it was a as I said before, a real jewel within the healthcare system in Gaza and in Palestine. And, you know, since 2005, when there was the blockade of Gaza, Shifa operated under extremely difficult situations. You know, this is the fifth war that has been brought upon Palestinians and Gaza. And each one of those wars since 2005 has brought some kind of devastation and difficulty in terms of maintaining the healthcare infrastructure. What we're seeing now since October 7th, and you said this in your intro, the 36 various hospitals throughout the Gaza Strip ministering to the 2.3 million Palestinians in Gaza, you said that 10 are somewhat operational. That's actually much more optimistic than what we're hearing right now, because of those 10 clinics that are 10 hospitals that are operating right now, not a single one is fully functional. And you might ask, how do I know this? Well, for the last month now, I've been part of an effort that we have been sending medical missions into Gaza from the United States. So we've been sending doctors and nurses to Gaza with the help of the WHO. So in the last 3 weeks, we've been able to send, you know, two or three different delegations. And I've been able to talk to the people who have gone there and have had to bear witness to what they've seen. Now, the situation in the north of Gaza, by the way, Jamal, is absolutely catastrophic, because there's no way that anybody can get from the Rafah crossing in the south to the north. So people in the northern area of Gaza are absolutely cut off, not just from healthcare at this point, but also from basic foodstuffs. They're the ones that are suffering most from the famine and the malnutrition and the ill effects of being denied access to food, water, and medicine. When we spoke with the physicians coming back who've been in the south, they make a report that is just bone chilling in terms of what they had to do and what they bore witness to. Let me run down some of the things. In all of the hospitals in Gaza right now, and especially those in this, and this is like European Hospital, Al Nasser Hospital, because they are perceived by Palestinians in Gaza as being relatively safe zones, you have thousands and thousands and thousands of Palestinian civilians who have gone there to seek refuge, to seek safety, to seek protection, as well as access to healthcare. And unfortunately, in both of those hospitals have come under attack directly by the Israeli military. And what you described at Al-Shifa Hospital in terms of people, and I should say this very carefully, the people that are being killed and buried, in some cases buried alive by the Israeli military, are not necessarily patients. There are just civilian population, individuals, community, families who go to these hospital settings because they feel a sense of safety. So what you described in Al-Shifa Hospital is also being described by our people on the ground in the south. They describe a catastrophic destruction, and there's no other way to say it, but a mutilation of the healthcare infrastructure in Gaza right now. So, for example, as I said before, not a single functioning complete clinic or hospital anywhere in Gaza. So what are the hospitals doing? Well, Shifa is not even able to function in any way, shape, or form. And the reports that we got back from people who have seen Shifa right now, a large segment of the hospital has literally been destroyed. Some of the reports, and the New York Times just published something about this, noted that the stench of death was everywhere within Shifa Hospital.
In your experience, or your colleagues' experience, doctors and humanitarian volunteers and healthcare workers, have they or have you seen other conflicts or situations of aggression where they deliberately target hospitals?
Well, I think that's really an excellent question, Jamal, because two things. Number one, under international law, under international humanitarian law, hospitals, clinics, patients, and healthcare workers are absolutely and unequivocally protected. So that's number one. they have protection under international law. And what that means specifically is that it is impermissible, it is illegal, if not immoral and unethical, to target militarily any hospital, any clinic, any healthcare setting, any patient, and any healthcare worker whatsoever. With that being said, what is happening in Gaza right now, and to some extent in the West Bank, but obviously more extreme in Gaza right now, Jamal, is an attack on the healthcare infrastructure unlike anything we've seen in the modern era. There's no other example anywhere in the modern era where healthcare workers, hospitals, clinics, and a civilian population have been targeted and have been destroyed, utterly destroyed, than what we're seeing in Gaza right now. We look at all of the conflicts in the modern era, whatever it is, even in World War II, we didn't see this kind of targeting and assault on healthcare infrastructure. The Korean War, the Vietnam War, the wars in the Gulf, the Iraq War, there is in sub-Saharan Africa, with all of the political instability and coup d'etats that have happened, we have never, ever seen this level of targeting, deliberate targeting and assault on the healthcare infrastructure. So not only, and this is according to Médecins Sans Frontières, this is according to the World Health Organization, this is according to all of the colleagues that I have who have been there and come back, have said this loudly, is that this is an utter crime against humanity. Not only is it illegal, but the immorality, the depravity of the Israeli military targeting. These are not just, as the Israelis like to talk about, Jamal, mishaps or misfires, or among the most disturbing things that we heard the Israeli general spokesman say the other day is that these things happen in war. That is completely morally objectionable and clearly not true. What we know from all the evidence, from people on the ground, from people who are there, from people who are able to look at the data, these are direct targeting of physicians. Now, close to 300 doctors, nurses, and healthcare workers have been assassinated and murdered by the Israeli military.
Exactly. What's their end goal?
Well, the end goal is clear. The end goal is unambiguous. The end goal is to continue the long-term ethnic cleansing of Palestine, of Palestinians. And so the end goal that we are seeing is, together with the destruction of healthcare infrastructure and the famine and the forced displacement of Palestinians in Gaza, it's part of the 75-year effort by the Israeli apartheid government to forcibly remove, to forcibly decapitate, literally and figuratively, to remove and uproot, if you will, Palestinians from their connection to the land. And you can do it by starving them. You can do it by displacing them. You can do it by, in terms of healthcare, denying them access, which is guaranteed under international law, guaranteeing them access under international law to access to medical care, which has been denied by the Israelis. The ultimate goal is that they either forcibly, are displaced even further, perhaps into Egypt or some other crazy theories that the Israelis have, putting them in the, in the Sinai or some sort of crazy idea. But ultimately, what we know from the data, and I want to talk about the data, is that the long-term health consequences of forced displacement, of famine, of this kind of trauma, shortens people's lives. And we know, for example, and this is prior to October 7th, that if you look at longevity and you look at the average length of time that people live, and if you compare Israelis to Palestinians who live on the same land, who have access to the same kind of environment and theoretically access to the same kind of foods and so on and so forth, Israelis live 10 years on, this is before October 7th, Israelis live on average 10 years more than the average Palestinian. Now, If you know anything about statistics and data, a 10-year difference for this large of a population is it's an extreme number that we have never seen before in terms of the world health metrics that we measure. Like, if you look at differences, like even in the United States, between, let's say, marginalized communities, African-American communities and white communities, for example, maybe the difference is a year or two. And that difference is considered not just statistically significant, but what we say experientially and physically significant, because 2 years with millions of people, that difference is a massive difference. In Palestine, Palestinians are dying, Jamal, and are not living on an average 10 years just because of their exposure to the occupation, to the settler colonial project, and to the apartheid system. Now, what we're going to see after October 7th is an acceleration of the death, destruction, and the negative health consequences of this brutality that is being put on Palestinians. I mean, the reports that we're getting from the doctors who are there, Jamal, and we're going to be getting some of the doctors to come on Arab Talk to talk about their experience in the future, is just bone chilling. It's bone chilling to see that they have to talk about and bear witness to children who are having their limbs amputated without anesthesia. Children who have to bear witness to the annihilation of their own mother, father, siblings in front of their eyes. Children who don't have enough food so that when they do eventually see a doctor, that they're unable to even move their bodies, not because of physical problems of pain or injury, but because they're so nutritionally deficient.
So we went from Israelis, if you recall, from the beginning of the war, and actually in other attacks on Gaza, saying that Israel doesn't target hospitals. Remember that? We're saying, yeah, Israel doesn't target hospitals. Then they went on to say that these hospitals are being used by Hamas. If you remember the big hawks about the Hamas's right. headquarters and so forth. Now you're saying you're talking to doctors who have been there. Has anyone said anything about Hamas operating out of these hospitals? I mean, they've been there during the conflict.
Yeah, I can be very clear about that. And this is unequivocal. Every single one of the doctors that I've spoken with, every single one of the reports I've read, not a single person, not a single report has been able to independently confirm or verify that Hamas has had any connection whatsoever to any of these hospitals, clinics, or healthcare centers. It just, there's no evidence for it whatsoever. And just to kind of go further on what you said, Jamal, you know, this whole thing about the destruction of Shifa Hospital, which, you know, I am just like crushed emotionally when I think about what has happened to Shifa, when I see the pictures and everything. It was such an amazing and beautiful hospital and healthcare center. It was just like amazing. And the destruction that's been brought to that. The Israelis have said, oh, there was a command center in Al-Shifa and, you know, there's Hamas and this and that. No evidence, Jamal, no evidence. The pictures that they showed were of a desk and a calendar, which they claimed was an operational calendar. And when they read the Arabic on it, it had nothing to do with Hamas or anything to do with operational activities whatsoever. You know, the Israelis, Jamal, we know this. They lie.
And
they lie. And lie. And they are being caught in their lies. Now, you know, we're going to get to this story, you know, in a minute here, but the lies that they perpetrated against World Central Kitchen aid workers that they killed as being a mistake. We even have Jose Andre, who's the, you know, founder of World Central Kitchen, calling that out as a bogus lie. The Israelis lie. They think they're going to get away with it. But when you talk to people on the ground who are there, who are witnessing this on their own, we see no confirmation whatsoever of all of the Israeli claims. They're complete rubbish. They're complete lies. And basically, as I said before, you know, this is part of an overall plan to ethnically cleanse and to basically commit a genocide so that Palestinians no longer exist in Gaza. We even have, Jamal, while children are starving to death in Gaza right now, we even have Israeli settlers talking about coming back to Gaza and forming settlements again on the Gaza Strip. We talked about this a few weeks ago. Jared Kushner is already talking about developing the Gaza Strip because it's very valuable beachfront property. I mean, the bizarreness, the depravity, the moral sickness that these statements belie are just extraordinary. It's truly extraordinary. Nowhere else do we see this, Jamal, in terms of the destruction of the healthcare infrastructure. I mean, when we look at what medical care is even being provided right now for Palestinians, it's not medical care. It's emergency care.
So moving on to our next story, which I'm sure everyone is familiar with.
Yeah.
So an Israeli strike in Gaza killed 7 aid workers for the nonprofit World Central Kitchen. This has touched off fury and indignation, which included global indignation, I should say, which also included inside the White House, prompting President Biden, on Tuesday, to release a public statement using a word he has rarely invoked over the course of the conflict. That has been filled with endless tragedy, outraged. He said he was outraged. That's the first time. The deaths of the workers who were attempting to basically deliver food to starving civilians in the besieged Gaza Strip included one dual U.S.-Canadian citizen, basically has raised the frustration of Biden and his top officials to a new level. This is according to some reports from senior administration officials, which I watched them, I think, even being interviewed on CNN. 7 aid workers were killed. One of them is Palestinian, but the 6 others, as I've mentioned, 1 Canadian-American, 3 from Britain, you get an Australian, and you get another person from Poland, okay?
Right.
And now it's all over the news. 33,000 Palestinians have been killed. We've been talking about Al-Shifa, destruction of the entire healthcare system, the killing of now 13,000 or maybe 14,000 plus children. They've been killed. But it took 6 internationals to be killed for this outrage, this global outrage, that now you have 40, I think the number stands at 40, maybe more, congressmen, congresswomen who signed a letter to threatening basically to stop military aid to Israel. This is also unprecedented. This is all just exposes the hypocrisy and the racism involved. You have to wait to see people getting killed, 6 from European countries, basically Western countries, I should say, not European countries, because also include Australia and United States, to have this outrage, to have some leaders now calling for a ceasefire when they stood on the sideline, in fact, being belligerent, asking Israel to continue. We still have people right here in the United States telling Israel to finish the job, basically the job meaning annihilate everyone in Gaza. But again, are the lives of 6 individuals more valuable than 33,000 Palestinians? Are the lives of 3 individuals from Western countries more valuable than the 14,000 children, Palestinian children who were massacred there? What's going on?
Well, Jamal, there's an easy answer to that. In terms of the world community, in terms of Western leaders, you know, that you have identified, it's very clear and it's very unambiguous that brown and black Palestinian lives don't matter. that the outrage when white people, let's just be direct, Jamal, we might as well call it what it is. The outrage that we're seeing because white people were killed by the Israeli military is just, you know, where has the, as you said, I mean, the hypocrisy, where has the outrage been with the 33,000 Palestinians that have been murdered and the 14,000 children that have been murdered and the 20,000 children that are going to be suffering from disability, emotional, cognitive, and physical disability for the rest of their lives? Of course it's racism. And, you know, to say Biden was outraged, Jamal, can we just say something? The day that the World Central Kitchen aid workers were murdered by the Israeli military, the very same day the Biden administration, again bypassing Congress, released more 2,000-pound bombs, more 500-pound bombs, and billions more dollars to the Israeli murder machine. So how can we take Western leaders like Biden, like Sunak in the UK, when they continue to provide cover and they continue to provide weapons for the murder machine called the Israeli military? So it's I mean, when I see Biden saying that he's outraged, all I could think is, you know, you're an insult to humanity and to morality. You're insulting the families and the lives of the 33,000 Palestinians who've been murdered by the weapons that you sent, President Biden, the weapons you sent to Israel, the cover that he's given Israel to commit this act of genocide on Palestinians. So, you know, we're on the one hand, and I think most people would say this, you know, we're glad that Jose Andres is finally coming to his senses and saying some direct things about, because, you know, the Israelis are saying, oh, this was an unfortunate mistake, which is complete rubbish. It's complete BS. And then Jose Andres said, no, this was not a mistake. This was a targeted assassination. Because if you read the details of what happened, Jamal, it's really disturbing. You had three cars, right, in a convoy. A missile attacked the first car. People got out of the car that survived, went into the second car. A few minutes later, another missile hit the second car. Few people survived. They got out and went into the third car to escape this brutality. And then the third car was attacked. Does that sound like a mistake, Jamal? A kind of mishap? That's a targeted assassination. And, you know, it's being called out. The plus side, obviously, it's being called out. We see the outrage. But I guess, Jamal, Palestinian children don't matter and have the same value.
And it reminds me actually when we talked about this in the show, comparing what's going on in the Ukraine with Palestine, you know,
right,
and the outrage, and I'm saying the outrage not only by governments but also by Western media, because now we're seeing CNN talking about it, we're seeing even Fox News talking about it, everybody's talking about it. But then when you see on a daily basis hundreds of Palestinians getting slaughtered, when you see the images, which they don't show you these images on US TV, but you can watch them on Al Jazeera and other networks, of babies, you know, cut to pieces. And, you know, we're talking about the destruction of the healthcare system, the starvation. And but there are other things that came out of this. This is not just like the hypocrisy is one thing. And in a sad way, you say, well, maybe this is at least will shed a spotlight on what's going on. I mean, I hate to say that, because at the end of the day, 7 innocent people were slaughtered, okay? Yeah. But that's what's going on. But then there are other important parts of this that we are finding out. One of them, one of the stupidest excuses, name excuses of the many, Israel said, oh, it's an AI issue. Like we're finding out, because this is with their own admittance that Israel uses AI. I mean, they used that and that was a mistake. Okay, but they've been using AI to target, and there's a lot of stories about this now in Israeli media, target Palestinian civilians, misidentifying in their assessment terrorists, you know, and they're killing civilians. So how many thousands of Palestinian civilians were killed because of AI mistakes. I mean, this is something new to warfare, where Israel, and people talk about AI in this country in a positive way. It's going to make your life easier. And this is the ugly side of AI, when now the military, and you know, Israel uses Palestinians as guinea pigs so they can sell their weapons on the international market. They're one of the big military producers in the world. And to show them, look, we have AI doing the work, you know, for us. And now we're finding out. I mean, all these things that they lie. Like, I saw a spokesman saying, we killed 12,000 Hamas. How in the hell do you know that those were Hamas fighters? If you watch the images of the Hamas fighters and say, oh, we destroyed two brigades here and there, Hamas fighters don't wear uniforms. They don't have ranks. They're running around with sweatpants and sneakers, and they're telling you they went and counted the bodies. They don't count bodies. Do you know what Israel does? They use bulldozers to bulldoze over these civilians and whatever. That's what they do with them. So that's very important to talk about, is how they've been slaughtering people. The other thing is, with this phone call that happened between Biden, because he's outraged, and Netanyahu, the second day Israel opened Eretz to allow trucks in, the second day Israel opened Rafah to allow trucks in, which basically contradicts what they were telling, that they weren't deliberately starving people. They were like saying, oh, it's unsafe, or in the case of Rafah, you know, we have some renegade civilians who were blocking the way of the trucks from entering Rafah, the 2,000 trucks lining up. Right. And now all of a sudden, aid is coming through Eretz, which has been shut down for now years. And now Rafah all of a sudden is allowing trucks. They managed to send their military or military police to drag these settlers who were sitting in front of these trucks, just throw them away and allow these trucks with one phone call. And that tells you again that they've been deliberately, I say Israel is its best and worst witness to basically highlight its atrocities and its crimes. They just basically say, we've been doing, aside from what we've seen also on social media with their soldiers bragging and filming themselves. So those are two other important things that the media should be talking about, not just like, oh, I can't believe it. Israel is attacking, aid workers. They've been killing doctors. They've been killing nurses. They've been killing medics. They've been killing children. Where have you been?
Exactly right, Jamal. And this, your analysis, which is spot on, gets to the point that we keep making. Israel lies. They lie to the media. They make things up, and the media continues to just parrot and uncritically give the talking points of the Israeli military, of the Israeli prime minister, as kind of facts. And that kind of distortion, that kind of misuse, if you will, to put it kindly, of journalism, means that the mainstream media here, Jamal, has been acting as the kind of supporting media partners of the apartheid state. They're not critically analyzing things. As you said, only after white people were killed in the World Central Kitchen did you begin to see this kind of pushing back a little bit against the Israeli spokespeople, who still continue to lie to them and say it was an unfortunate mistake. Again, we've debunked that. It's complete BS. But we have to remember, they are getting away with murder, the Israeli and the Israeli military. There's no accountability here, Jamal. I mean, let's be clear. Has anything really significantly changed on the ground? I mean, we have seen maybe at Erez and at Rafah and Kerem Shalom, maybe a few more trucks coming in. That was yesterday. after the so-called difficult call that Biden had with Netanyahu. But the real test, Jamal, is what's going to the real test is not what happened yesterday. The real test is what happens today, what happens tomorrow, what happens in the next week, what happens in the next 5 weeks. Jamal, we have famine in Gaza. We have children literally starving to death. We have children who are dying because they are nutritionally starved. We have Palestinians in Gaza, Jamal, who are eating cattle feed, who are eating weeds just to get a bare minimum of a meal right now. And so I don't have any confidence whatsoever. It is such, I can't say what I really want to say on the air, obviously, but it is such a lie that we see from the White House about how Biden is being tough with Netanyahu. Does anybody really believe that when he says he's tough in the same breath they're sending more weapons? And this is kind of an interesting point, Jamal. Everybody's, including Jose Andre, is calling for an independent assessment and evaluation of what happened, right? We want to know why, as you've said many times on this show, why is the, you know, the fox who's guarding the hen house, why is the fox investigating his murderous impulses? Why
the fox, are we letting? I would say the rapist. Imagine allowing the killer and the rapist to take the stand to basically investigate their own crime. And that's what, which is still, by the way, this is still, until few people have been calling for it, but this is still the official position by the United States, is Israel should investigate what happened.
No, it isn't, Jamal. No, this is interesting. This is what I wanted to say. Biden, as of this morning, is still not saying officially, coming from the White House, that they want an independent investigation. Yeah. What they've said is that Israel should do the investigation. What the rest of the world community is saying, no, Israel cannot investigate itself. We need a separate, independent investigation. And the White House, and specifically Joe Biden, Jamal, is not in support of having an independent investigation.
Well, we went through this with the assassination of journalist Shireen Abu Akleh.
Exactly. Okay.
And the only reason that the White House was asking for an Israeli report on the thing was because she was an American citizen. So and after facing a lot of pressure, they got all their information from Israel just to actually say, yeah, the bullet was fired because Israel before was trying to blame it on militant around her, that the bullet was fired from an Israeli weapon, which is an American weapon. It was an American bullet. But aside from this, after the investigation, everything went. Now we know who killed her. Even Israel said she was killed again. They used the mistake, like they're killing people. The only country in the world that just can justify everything by saying it's an error or it's a mistake. But there is no accountability. You know, Shireen Abu Akleh was killed more than a year ago. And no one has been brought to justice for killing her. Now, you have this investigation, what Israel has done, because it fits this reaction. They fired two commanders who are in charge of the unit that targeted her. That's basically what they've done. They fired, they said they did not follow IDF combat rules and so forth. But you're not going to bring anyone into justice. This is, again, one sliver of the many war crimes that are happening in Gaza. But the only difference is that now you have Poland involved, you have UK, the UK involved, you have Canada, the United States, and Australia. You know, so you have foreign citizens that they have to talk about compensation, which, by the way, Israel, day in, day out, they assassinate Palestinian civilians and children. Their families never receive any compensation, even when they make so-called mistakes. But now they have to answer to this. They have to answer to a war crime accusation and so forth, and threats for holding deliveries on Israel. But then the most important thing in this whole thing, again, is the war crimes. We have the Leahy Law, which basically prohibits countries from using American-made weapons in violation to human rights and so forth. You have all these mechanisms put in place, but Israel gets a pass. And Israel will get a pass because they've started their PR campaign. Now when CNN talks about this issue, if you noticed, I don't know, they immediately bring one of the hostages' families to interview them, you know, to balance the story, to cover like, oh, exactly. We still have hostages there. They never bring a Palestinian family who's a surviving member of a Palestinian family who had lost 10, 12 members of the same family in one air raid and so forth. They never talk about this. So, and then you see now all their spokespeople, which I should add, watch carefully the Israeli spokespeople. You're going to either hear an Australian accent, a British accent, a Northern American accent, or a South African accent. Just like, think about it. These are the spokespeople. They're not even from there, okay? And they're now being invited on all these shows to explain Israel because they found out that this time they cannot lie. They're put in a corner so for public relations, and they told them, listen, you got to admit it and say it's a mistake. Don't, you know, blame it on AI. Blame it on two stupid commanders who didn't do the job right, on human error, but don't blame it on the policy of Israel being a murderous state, which that's what Israel is.
Well, that's exactly right, Jamal. And that's why, you know, and the background to all of this, right, is the application to the ICJ that South Africa did and other countries kind of got on board with, basically saying Israel is committing genocide in Palestine against Palestinians. That case found cause. The International Court of Justice found cause. They found that there was enough evidence that Israel was committing genocide to allow the case to go forward. Although that case may take a long time, it seems like Israel is continuing to give the international community more and more and more evidence to support the South African claim that it is, in fact, committing genocide and crimes against humanity. So, you know, for Palestinians, Jamal, it's a little bit too late, right? Because, you know, we have 33,000 dead. We have 1.5 million internally displaced. We have 14,000 children murdered. We have complete destruction of the healthcare infrastructure. Even when the International Court of Justice says that, yes, Israel is committing genocide and has to be held accountable, they don't care. They won't. The United States won't support the ruling because they're not a signatory. So it will completely will bypass the accountability. And so we have to ask ourselves, right? How do we hold, as an international community, how do we hold the crimes against humanity that Israel is engaging in? And we don't have time to kind of go into detail today, but there is methodology, and that's the BDS, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions. If world leaders are not going to hold the Israeli government for their murderous genocidal campaign, then we will do to the apartheid state what the world did to apartheid South Africa. We will engage in a process of boycott, divestment, and sanctions so that dealing with the apartheid state will become financially ruinous for any company, for any group, or for any individual. And that's going to be the accountability that we will need to implement.
Which we've been seeing, actually, the effect of it.
Yeah.
Just recently, McDonald's acquired all of its franchises in Israel, I think about 240, right, after there was a global boycott because McDonald's was distributing Happy Meals and food to Israeli soldiers. McDonald's has never witnessed such a boycott where its stock has dropped more. You know, McDonald's is a very steady stock. It goes up 3%, comes down 3%. That they had this major drop in this quarter that they had to reacquire all these franchises that they sold to an Israeli company and saying, that wasn't our decision. This was done by the franchise, they are separately operated, but now we cannot trust the Israelis operating our franchise, so we have to bring these restaurants under the American McDonald's Corporation. I mean, that's one. The other one is Starbucks. Starbucks exactly. Also value has dropped globally because there is a global boycott. Okay. And then others. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. When the BDS movement was launched, the Israeli leadership, Netanyahu, they shrugged their shoulders and said, this is insignificant. It's just like a fad that's going to go away. But then later on, they declared it as an existential threat. Exactly. And I know that because I wrote about that. You know, right. I forgot what year, but that's what it is now. And I think now what we're seeing with this global movement that's going on. And by the way, I have to say, Moody, which basically monitors the health of countries and state, downgraded Israel on the stock market.
Yeah.
So we haven't seen the result of the boycott because, hey, my fellow U.S. citizen, April 15th is around the corner. Make sure to write your check to Israel. That's what's going to happen, you know, and that's what keeps Israel afloat is that our tax money goes directly to Israel. But if they're going to keep doing this, I think the boycott movement has to basically grow even further. Yeah. So the Israeli companies keep hemorrhaging with losses, and all the companies that do business with it, I mean, just like with South Africa, also will lose. And that's the only way to kind of stop Israel in its tracks from committing further atrocities.
I think you're exactly right, Jamal. And I absolutely believe that the only thing that will begin to not just hold the apartheid regime of Israel accountable, but to bring it to its knees, will be the BDS movement. That's the only thing that's going to cause it to change its efforts. I just want to say just really quickly, because I know we have another thing to cover quickly, but if you look at recent reports coming out of the Israeli press, it's interesting how many thousands, tens of thousands of Israelis have left Israel and are now applying for second citizenship or second passports in other countries. They're fleeing. So we see the economic pressure already occurring for Israelis. They're leaving the country. They're moving their money out of Israeli banks into European and Western banks. And they're trying to get passports in other countries. So that's kind of another way to measure the impact of the BDS movement, because it is, in fact, as you said, Moody's downgraded Israel in terms of economic integrity and economic viability. So we need to keep putting that kind of pressure, because ultimately, that's what's going to bring the accountability that we're speaking about, because it's not going to come from the United States. It's not going to come from Biden. It's not going to come from European countries. It's going to come from people on the ground who say enough is enough of genocide and apartheid Israel.
I should just quickly add that BDS is a peaceful movement, and it is basically allows you to practice your First Amendment, the right to choose. Moving on to our last story, this is a story we covered back in December, Jess, when images circulated worldwide showing dozens of Palestinian men in Gaza, in the city of Beit Lahia, in northern Gaza, who were stripped to their underwear, kneeling or sitting, hunched over, blindfolded, and then later on put into the back of Israeli military trucks like cattle. And Israel was trying to brag and show they were arresting Hamas. And guess what? Immediately when these pictures were posted on social media, people were starting to recognize these people. Say, oh, this is the grocery store owner, and this is the pharmacist. And this is the doctor, and this is the neighbor next door. And you know, this is our teacher in high school. You know, those are all civilians that Israel was humiliating and parading. Now, a local publication, actually it's Israeli, it's called Plus 972 magazine and Local Call, they started to interview these individuals because people recognize them after they went and tortured them and humiliated them and made them sleep naked on the ground. They started recording testimonies. What we're now finding out, there were these detainees, innocent detainees, were electrocuted, subjected to electric shocks. They have burns to show on their skin, lighter burns and cigarette burns. They spat in their mouths. They were deprived sleep and were put on cold cement to sleep on. They were deprived food, access to bathrooms, until they defecated on themselves to humiliate them. Many of them were tied to a fence for hours, handcuffed and blindfolded. Some of them had to have limbs amputated because the circulation was cut off from their hands. And again, some testified having been beaten all over their bodies, having cigarette extinguished in on their necks or backs. Several of them have died, so their families don't know what happened to them, but then you have eyewitnesses saying that they died either during when they were incarcerated or after they released them. They were like so poorly beaten and starved to death and tortured that after they released them, a few days later on, they basically died. So now there is this big story that I recommend people to read because we don't have too much time about it. And people were talking about it when Israel was trying to show something because the images were coming out showing all the death and the destruction and the hospitals being bombed and the homes being bombed. They were running around with megaphones asking all civilians to come down and surrender and to get basically paraded because they needed to show something to the outside world that they were winning the war, which they keep claiming they're winning the war now, 6 months into the war. And basically they tortured these civilians. And now their stories, individual stories, now they're coming out. There is a video interviews. There are audio interviews. There's mental also abuse, basically sexually abusing women and young boys. Mentally abusing people by taking them, telling them to point to their home and then burning it in front of their eyes.
Well, Jamal, this makes Guantanamo Bay look like a country club. And what we're witnessing is a kind of torture regime that the Israeli military and the Israeli government, who greenlights this, perpetrate on Palestinian civilians. Yet another crime against humanity. Yet another war crime, but this, everything you've described and everything written in, that magazine Plus 972, which is a really amazing story. And we want to encourage our listeners and viewers to read this story. It's a depiction and a description of torture. Of
and the title of the story, I should, if you want to Google it, it's in Plus 972 magazine. It's called Inside Israel's Torture Camp for Gaza Detainees. So if you put that, it's a long story. It gives, like I said, intricate details to what happened. And again, that's the only publication, which is basically local publications. Hopefully other major publications will pick up on this story because this is yet multiple war crimes have been committed. I mean, we lost count on all the war crimes Israel is committing. It's almost on a daily basis. It's committing a war crime.
But Jamal, just to be clear about it, the war crimes that Israel is committing on a daily basis started in 1947 and have continued uninterrupted for over 75 years. What we're seeing now is a documentation and a kind of display in other media, examples, media depictions of these war crimes, of these crimes against humanity, And the 972 article on torture of Palestinian civilians will undoubtedly be one of the most important things written about what happened to Palestinian civilians in Gaza, Jamal. So my question to you, final question, I know we got to run. How come we didn't see this on CNN and ABC and CBS? I haven't seen this report.
And that's why, not just that, but they keep reporting on the debunked stories of rape and the New York Times. And by the way, the New York Times fired the writer, quietly fired the writer. They based their whole stories on hoax. But then when you have these stories, which have eyewitnesses, videos, and thank God for videos, and now you can use your phone to record all these atrocities. And of course, the only recent atrocity that made big news, which we talked about it, is when you have Westerners getting killed. And again, they don't care about brown, black people, people from the Middle East. I shouldn't be surprised. You shouldn't be surprised.
I'm not surprised.
More than 1 million Iraqis were killed over a lie, the lie of weapons of mass destruction. And there was no apology. There was no compensation. Over 1 million Iraqis, not to mention of all the American soldiers who were killed over a lie that the United States has admitted. So if we have witnessed that before, why should we be surprised about what Israel is committing today?
I'm not surprised, and I'm not going to be surprised, and I'm sorry for keep bringing this up, Jamal. I'm not going to be surprised when Donald Trump is our next president because of American support for Israel. I'm not going to be surprised, and no one should be surprised, that the support, the undying support for the Israeli apartheid and crime against humanity is going to force a fascistic government on the people of the United States. And we can thank Israel for that.
You've been listening to Arab Talk on KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM. Go to our website, arabtalkradio.com, to download the latest shows. And we'll talk to you next week.
We'll see you next week.